Yes. Of all the commandments, what is the most important? The most important one, Jesus answered, is this. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. The second is this. Love your neighbor as yourself. There's no commandment greater than these. And we looked at the last couple weeks, loving God wholeheartedly, passionately, engaging your mind in loving God, and living your love for God, putting effort into loving God. What is love for God? We looked at that last week. By the way, if you guys want candy, have candy. We looked at that last week. What is love for God?
Obeying
Him. Obedience. Jesus showed us love for God by His obedience when He went to the cross, even though He didn't really want to go to the cross. He wanted to accomplish what the cross would accomplish, but He didn't want to have to go through all that pain and suffering and such. How do we do that? How do we obey? Do we have any help? The Holy Spirit, yep. Remember Jesus talking to the disciples night before He was going to be crucified? And He said, I'm going to go away, but I'm going to send you someone to help you. He said, if you love Me, obey My commandments. I'm going away, but I'm going to leave someone to help you do that. And we have the Holy Spirit to help us to live in obedience and to love God. Tonight we're going to look at loving others, the second part of this idea. Let's pray, and we'll get into it. Lord, just pray tonight that You'd help us to focus in on this passage. That is just an amazing chapter in the Bible that many consider one of the best, the greatest chapters in the Bible. Just talking about love and what that means and how to do that. We want our lives to be about this. We want our lives to be in every way about loving You and about loving other people. And those things are inseparable. I just pray tonight as we kind of go through these things that we'd be able to evaluate our lives in the way that we love and try to line up our love for people with the love that You call us to. Just pray this all in Your name. Amen. Open up to 1 Corinthians 13. That is basically where we're going to be tonight. We're looking at this because this is called the love chapter, and it's called the love chapter because it's all about loving others. So we're going to just break it apart, look at all the different elements of it. The middle part of what we'll look at tonight, I actually want to... we're going to go through, and the chapter actually describes what love is. And I would encourage you guys, as we go through these things tonight, to just take a look at your life and the way that you love people and the way that you live your love for people, and compare your love with this love and see how it matches up. I was actually thinking earlier when we had the staff meeting, that's a little bit like... a rubric. Do you guys know what a rubric is? Like when you take a test, you know, and you fill in the answers or you fill in the little dots or whatever, and the teacher has the test key, you know, that they match it up with. That is the rubric. And that this would be something that we can just match up our lives to and go, is this how I'm loving? Is this how I'm living my love towards other people? So 1 Corinthians 13, starting in verse 1, says this, if I speak in human or angelic tongues, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship, that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. He basically lays out three different concepts here, that the Corinthian believers, which is who Paul wrote to here, that they would have understood and they would have related to. A big part of what 1 Corinthians is about is Paul addressing some problems that the Corinthians were having in their church. And the biggest of those problems is that they were arguing about who should have what place in the church and who should be using what spiritual gifts in the church and what spiritual gifts are more important than other spiritual gifts. And he addresses a lot of those issues. He's addressing some of that same idea here in 1 Corinthians 13. And he starts out and says, if I speak in human or angelic tongues but do not have love, I'm a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. I'm annoying is basically what that is saying. If I am the greatest speaker in the world, which this would have made it, the reason why Paul puts this in here is that the Corinthians would have been drawn to this example. The biggest, most rock star type person you could be in Corinth was a speaker. They would have people that would come into the square there in the town and just speak all the time. And there were guys who were well known because they were these amazing speakers. And the better speaker you were, the more popular you were, the more well known you were. It was just a highly commendable thing to be a good speaker in the city of Corinth. It'd be like in our world now, if you are a rock star, you somehow have some elevated status above everyone else. Or you're a movie star, you have, you know, an elevated status above everyone else, and everybody wants to, well, not everybody, but lots of people want to be rock stars, lots of people want to be movie stars. People watch American Idol because they wish they could be that good and, you know, become famous, and there's just a strong desire to be those kind of people. And that same view would have been viewed towards great speakers at this time. And so he said, you can be the best speaker in the world. In our context, you could be the greatest rock star or the greatest movie star admired by millions. But if you do not have love, it's not worth anything. For a speaker, it's if you don't have love, your words don't, they're just annoying noise. They don't mean anything. It's not worthwhile. It says, if I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but do not have love, I am nothing. He's addressing here the Corinthians' problem with spiritual gifts. So they were pairing their spiritual gifts and saying, what's more important, what's not important? And these are all spiritual gifts that he lists here. And the idea is that if I'm gifted by God in amazing ways, okay, if I have the gift of prophecy and God uses me to directly reveal his message, which was pretty amazing, you look at the prophets and you go, man, those guys were amazing what they were able to do. And have the gift of knowledge and can fathom all mysteries, if person on the earth. If you had faith that could move mountains, literally, you know, this is Jesus' saying, faith to move mountains. If you had faith that you could say to that mountain, you know, you'd look out at Mount Redoubt, which would be that way, and you go, I just want you to move over there. And you could just do that. You had such faith in God that it was moving mountain kind of faith. You could do amazing things. If you were a great leader, if you were a great teacher, if you had a great heart of mercy, any of the ways that you are gifted, and you guys are all gifted in many ways, but you don't have love, he says, I am nothing. Worthless. Which is a rough statement. And especially in a world where we always want to say, oh, you're very valuable and everything you do is valuable. He's saying if you don't have love, really your value is not much at all. It's actually zero. All those great things that you think you're doing, they're worthless. They don't mean anything. Your life doesn't really mean anything substantial if you don't have love. There's no value. And he says, if I give all I possess to the poor, I give over my body to hardship that I may boast. but do not have love, I gain nothing. This is where I sacrifice everything. You guys know people, I know people, that they're just generous. They just give and give and give and are always giving up things and giving people things. And you could be the most generous person in the world, give up everything that you own, give up even your life, your body to be tortured and you know, be a martyr. But if you don't have love, complete waste. All that work you put into being generous and caring for people and giving what you have to the poor so that they can have things and suffering for the cause of Christ, you gain nothing if you're not loving people. If the reason why you're doing these things is not love, it's a waste of time. John 13, you can just look up here, verse 34 and 35 says, "A new command I give you." This is Jesus talking to the disciples again the night before he was going to be killed. It says, "A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." This is how we are supposed to be recognized. People are supposed to see us and the way that we love and go, "Oh, you know what? Kaylee must be a Christian. Did you see? Did you see how she loves people? She must be a Christian." That's supposed to be our distinguishing trait. Not how much we can argue for what the Bible says, not how much we share Jesus with people, which is a loving act, but it's how we love people. The point there on the handout is a life lived without love, without loving others, is a life wasted. And I know that sounds harsh, but that's what he's saying. It is harsh, but it's true. You can do the greatest things in the world, and if it's not from a heart of wanting to love people, it's a complete waste of time. And it's a waste of your life, and it's a waste of your talent. We need love for people. Are we getting that from what he's saying here? He goes on in 1 Corinthians 4 and just starts to describe what this kind of love looks like. Okay, so we can compare it with our kind of love. Are we loving people? This is the way to find out. Love is patient. Okay, you guys have a bunch of ticks on your handout. I just want you guys to write these things in. Love is, and just put patience. It's not, or patient, if you want to put that. Patience. Patience is love, and to love someone is to be patient with someone, which means it means to be wronged and not to retaliate. Okay, to suffer for someone to treat you badly, and you not to respond badly to them. To be long-suffering. Jesus is our example for this in 1 Peter chapter 2, which I don't have up here, I'll just read to you. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 23 says, "When they hurled insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly." This is Jesus' example of how he loved the people who were torturing him and eventually killed him. They were ridiculing him, tearing him apart with their words. And he didn't say a single thing to retaliate in return. He suffered physically, but didn't threaten them. Totally could have threatened them. Did he have the power to do whatever he wanted in that situation? Totally had the power to do that. And a lot of times we have the power to, "Oh man, this person is getting on me, this person is making fun of me, this person's talking about me badly, this person's making me feel bad. I know how to get them. I have that power. I have the power to get back." Jesus definitely had the power to get back at them. But he instead went, you know what? I'm not going to retaliate. I'm going to be obedient all the way to the cross. So love is patient. It does not envy, or love is patient, love is kind. That love is kindness. That's the second one on your sheet. It means to be good to others, to do good to others. Sometimes we think love is being nice, which we kind of relate to kindness, which a lot of times love is being nice to people. But sometimes kindness is doing what's best for the other person, and it can be a little bit dicey and a little bit sticky and a little bit ugly, and it doesn't seem all that nice the way that we're treating someone. I've multiple times had to, in a loving way, correct people who were just wrong. I've had to do that recently. I was being kind to them by correcting their behavior because I'm doing good to them. Okay? It's doing good. It can mean to show mercy to them, to show goodness to them. So love is kindness. Love is not, it does not envy. It's not envious, which means to want something that someone else has. To want something that someone else has. And to not want them to have what they have. Okay? That's envy. To want something that someone else has and to not want them to have it. If I can't have it, then I don't want you to have it. Envy is the source of a lot of ridicule that people shower on each other and make fun of each other. It's why people put people in categories of prep and jock, and because they have something that you're a little bit envious of, and so you're going to tear them down for what they do have. Okay? Not envious. Love is not envious. It does not boast. It's not boastful. It does not brag about who they are or what they have. Now keep in mind with this, sometimes we jokingly and for fun and are just goofing around, we brag and are, you know, like, oh, that was so awesome or whatever, you know. And that's just goofing around. But this is really honestly trying to puff yourself up, trying to highlight your own accomplishments. It's actually the desire to make other people envious of you. I want you to want what I have. I want you to wish you were me. Love is not boastful. Love is not arrogant, not proud. But the word really is arrogant. I like arrogant because it's the idea of puffing, of being puffed up. It really has everything to do with comparison. It is impossible to love someone from a place of comparison. We do it all the time. We compare ourselves to people all the time. We cannot love people from a place of comparing our lives to their lives, what we have to what they have, our social standing, how skinny we are, how pretty we are. It's all a comparison game. It's impossible to love people from a place of comparison. It's not arrogant. Verse 5 says, it does not dishonor others. Which is really that love is not rude. That's what you guys can write down in there. It's not rude. You can't be a jerk to someone and be loving them. Can't be obscene or rude. Lack of love is how I explain some older brothers. Not rude, not a jerk. You shouldn't hear, I can't believe you just said that to them. You shouldn't hear that. It means you've been rude. You've been a jerk. Love is not self-seeking. I want to pause here on this one because I think for our culture, our world, our reality that we live with day after day after day, this is huge for us. This is huge in our understanding of what love is. You go to other cultures in the world, some other cultures, you go to cultures in the past, and they were much more community-minded. Everyone realized that they were a part of a community, and really the community was the thing that was important. The group of people that you were associated with was the thing that was important. But we live in a society that is very individualistic, which is, there's nothing wrong with that in general. We are very individualistic. It's not necessarily bad, but we have to be careful in our individualism to not be self-seeking. I actually really believe that we live in a culture that is predominantly self-seeking. It's predominantly about me. I do this because I want to do this. I do this because it seems right to me to do this. I make decisions that benefit me. And we all hear that and we all go, yeah, of course. It actually doesn't even seem bad. I mean, that's just what you do. You got to get yours. Yeah, care for other people and think about other people, but primarily you got to think about you. You got to think about what's going on with you and what's best for you. And then maybe, just maybe, when you have a family, then it's all about my family. That's what's important, my family. Expand that a little bit. And God's saying, if you're going to love, love is never, ever, ever, it doesn't actually say this, but it's saying, it is never, you can never love and be seeking what's best for you. You can never be loving and be looking out to get yours. It's impossible. Love is never self-seeking. And our world does not live this way. I think you guys know that. Our culture does not live this way. Our culture does not naturally think of others before they think of themselves, of the group before they think of the individual. And there's no better time for us to be different, for people to go, oh, they must be a Christian. Look, they're always thinking about everybody else. That's what distinguishes us. That's what should make us different. That's what should make us stick out in the crowd and people go, oh yeah, they must be a Christian. That's what Jesus called his disciples to. He said, when you're out in the world, I'm sending you out and you're going to go and be among people who don't know me, don't understand, don't know my ways, people who reject me. And you know what? They're going to know who you say you are. You don't even have to say who you are. They're going to know it because they're going to see how you love each other. And they're going to go, oh, must be those Christ follower people. That's what we're called to love. Love is not easily angered. You guys can write in there that love is not touchy. That's what easily angered means. I don't know about you, but sometimes I am touchy. To love others means, it doesn't mean that you're not going to get angry sometimes, okay? Anger happens, it's an emotion, you'll respond that way sometimes. When you're angry really determines whether there's sin or not. But if everyone is walking on eggshells around you, you're not loving them. if people feel like, oh, no, I can't. Ross is a little touchy today. Don't talk to him. You know, that's not love. Love is not touchy. Not easily angered. Not like, I could pop off at any second. Don't say the wrong thing to me, because I'll... Love keeps no record of wrongs. I just put love forgives and forgets. Which means you do something wrong to me, you wrong me, and we get wronged all the time, right? Love doesn't keep a record of those things and go, well, when I need this, you know, you're writing it down. When I need this, I'm going to pull this out. When we're in a fight and I have to, you know, come back and shoot them with some bullets of their past, I'm gonna hold on to this. I'm going to remember this. Love lets it go. That's actually what forgiving means. Someone does you wrong and you go, I'm just going to let it go. I'm not going to hold on to it. I have joked with Ellie since she was a little baby, because I don't know if you guys know, but Ellie has a scar on her foot because Melissa had her in a, what are those things called? Baby Bjorn or whatever, I don't know. The things where you carry the baby on the front, and Ellie was faced out, and she, we had a minivan, and she went and slammed the minivan door right on Ellie's foot. All of a sudden, Ellie's crying. Got this huge cut on her foot. We were actually getting ready to fly away, and we had to run to the hospital and get it all taken care of. And we got asked like 100 times, so had this happen? Check to make sure we weren't abusing our little baby, which is good that they did that. But since then, I always tell Ellie, I'm like, if you really want something, you need to like point to the foot and see, Mom, like, if I really want ice cream, my foot's kind of hurting a little bit. Can you get me some ice cream? But we shouldn't do that. I joke with her about it. But we shouldn't keep bringing things back up. And usually the reason why we bring things back up is to get our own way. We've been wronged. We've been mistreated in the past. Someone's even apologized for it, asked for forgiveness from you for it. And we use it down the line because we want something, and this is going to kind of help us maneuver our way into something. Verse 6 says, love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. Love does not celebrate when evil occurs. Rejoice actually means to celebrate. It's the same word in both parts of that sentence. So love does not celebrate with evil, but love celebrates when the truth is lived out. This is saying that when a friend comes to you and says, oh, I'm sleeping with my girlfriend, that you don't go, yeah, all right, right on. Even though I would never do that, but yeah, cool. We don't rejoice when sin is going on, when things that are apart from God are going on. When a friend of yours puts a girl that you hate in her place, you know, and is like, you know, totally rips her apart or something. You don't go, yeah, good job. Good job for tearing her down, bringing her down a notch. She needed that. We don't rejoice with that. It's not love. But instead, we celebrate in the truth. We celebrate when truth is lived out. We celebrate when someone goes, I've decided to follow Jesus with my life. We go, yes, I celebrate that. I'm going to party. That is awesome. That is unbelievable. I've really been struggling with the sin, but God has been helping me to overcome it. We rejoice with that. That's so awesome. That's the stuff we rejoice in. The bottom line is that you get excited about and you encourage others to do the right things by God's standards. That's love. Goes on in verse 7, says, it always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. So protects is the next one that I don't even have up there. Protects is the next one on your list there. That is that you're concerned about protecting those around you. I want to help keep you from, shield you from things that will hurt you. I'm not just concerned about my walk with God, but I'm concerned about your walk with God. I want to help protect you. It's the idea that Paul gives when he says, there are people that were eating food sacrificed to idols, and that was a no-no, and that was bad, and they believed it was sin to do that, because you could actually get a pretty good deal eating that, buying that meat that had been sacrificed to idols, and get a bargain on it. But there were lots of believers who thought, that's sin. If I eat that food, it's sin for me. And Paul is saying, it's not sin. It's definitely not sin. Go ahead and eat whatever food. Who cares? That idol is just a piece of, a hunk of clay or whatever. It's nothing important. But he said, if someone else believes it's sin and they're going to sin if they see you eating it, don't eat it. Why? Because you care about that other person. You go, I'm not going to eat that in front of you if that's sin for you. I care as much about your walk with God as my walk with God. It protects. It trusts, which literally means it believes all things. You believe in people. You have faith in them. I don't know about you, but I love it when people believe in me. It kind of inflates me up, and I go, yeah, I can do it. Love believes in people. It trusts. It is hopeful, which means it hopes all things, literally. It looks for the best in other people. You know, there's those people that always kind of have that pessimistic attitude that, like, oh, man, they'll never get it right. But to love is to hope the best. It hopes all things in people. It looks for the best in people. The last couple kind of go together with next one is it perseveres. It always perseveres, which means it keeps loving even when it's difficult to love. I don't know about you, but I've had people in my life that are very difficult to love. Like, maybe you can love them for a little bit, but to love them long term, when they keep on doing what they do that annoys you and that's hard for you to love, and they just keep doing that and they just keep being that, and you just love them and love them and love them. God's kind of love, the love we're supposed to have for each other, is love that keeps going. Even when it gets really, really hard to love. And then love never fails is the first part of verse 8. Which means love never stops. Never ends. It's never like, oh, I've loved enough. That's it. Doesn't give up on people. It doesn't go, you know what, I've loved and 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 look. Look at them. Look at all this love I've poured into them, and look. That's it. Nope, it stops and goes, look, yeah, need to keep loving. Love and love and love and love and love. It doesn't stop. That's love. How does your love compare to that love? Are you loving this way? Is this the way you're loving other people? This is the love that Jesus has called us to. This is love for our neighbor, love for the people that are around us. Everything in our life hinges on loving this way. Remember, he said it's the two hinges, loving God, loving others. The door doesn't work if the hinges aren't on. This is the way to love with that hinge, with loving other people. Then he finishes off in the rest of the chapter there. Verse 8, it says, love never fails, but then he goes on and says, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we only see a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. He gives three examples, which sometimes are hard to like filter through the word, the wording on it. But he's saying, right now, we only understand things in a small way compared to eternity. In eternity, we will know fully. Right now, we have very, very limited knowledge, very, very limited gifts that we can serve each other with, and in a lot of ways, very, very limited understanding of how to love people correctly. That's now, okay, limited. In eternity, it will be unlimited. And then he gives the example of when I was a child, I was like a child, right? And when I was an adult, I was like an adult. I don't act like a child when I'm an adult. If you do that, it's really weird. So you act like an adult when you're an adult, and you act like a child when you're a child. That's totally appropriate. We are like children now. We are limited. When we get to heaven, we will be different, transformed, and our life will be gone. The life that we're living right now will be gone. I'm looking in a mirror, and a dim mirror at that, and I see a reflection that's not completely accurate, and it's a little bit hard to see. But on that day, in heaven, in eternity, we will see face to face our God. I know in part, I shall know fully. Okay, he's giving an example of, right now, we're limited. We're limited in these human bodies, we're limited in what we understand, what we know, but this is the key. He says, but these three remain, faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. What he's saying there is, the only thing that will remain, the only thing that is eternal in this life is faith, hope, and love. And we're going to focus on love because he's saying the greatest of these, the most important of these is love, because faith and hope actually come out of our love for God and love for others. Love is the important thing. Our love is the only thing that will last beyond this life. What you do when you grow up won't matter. Whether you are on the basketball team or not on the basketball team won't matter. Whether you got to bungee jump when you were 23 or not, it doesn't matter. Everything in this life is going to fade away and is not going to matter. The only thing that will last is how we loved. Love is the only thing that will last forever. I hope that kind of puts it in perspective for you. I think that's what he's really trying to do. Because we get sucked into so many things that really, in the long haul, don't really matter. They're passing away. They're not important. In the scope of eternity, the thing that's important is how we love. Questions at the bottom says, in what areas of life are you choosing to love the people around you? And I know you guys are going to have some answers for that, because you guys are loving people in your life. And hopefully you're loving them with this kind of love. And in what areas of your life are you choosing not to love by these standards that we looked at? What are three lessons that God is teaching you or reminding you of tonight? God, I just thank you for not leaving us in the dark about how to love people, about what that looks like. Thank you for just being really concrete with it and allowing us to really have a measure to figure out, am I loving this person in my life? Am I loving these people in this situation? Am I loving when this happens in my life? We can compare that to the standard that you've set out for us in 1 Corinthians 13. The great thing is that standard is not unattainable. It's not something that we go, oh man, I really wish I could love that way. And you've given us the Holy Spirit that will love people through us this way. That will help us to love you and love others the way that your son did. It's possible. It's actually what we're called to. It's what should set us apart. I pray that as we go to our So What time tonight, that you'd help help us really make some decisions on how to love people. Maybe even tonight we need to decide, I haven't been loving this person at all the way that's described in 1 Corinthians 13. And that we need to change that tonight. Pray that you give us the strength to do that and the willpower to just decide to love people with everything that we are. And to really get that nothing else really matters. Pray this all in your name.